I teach. We have a website, experiencebook.org. We have 68 thoughts on the steps, and we have the last year and a half of podcasts. All the books covered and all the steps. We have three meetings tonight. On Wednesday night, we're at 11th time through the book. We've been doing this for over 10 years. I've done about 1,400 of these meetings. And we're on more about alcoholism. So for new people, this is really going to be powerful stuff. It shows us the problem and leads us to make a decision about the solution. On Saturday at 9:15, we're at a different part of the book, and we're on the fourth step, and we're going to look at fear. I have some really good handouts on that. So if you can join us on Saturday at 9:15. On Sunday, we're finishing up the book for the 10th time, and we start a vision for you. And that meeting's at 6 o'clock. So that's the deal. Before I start, I'm going to ask God to set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others, especially help me let go of all my old ideas so I can live in your truth. Amen. So on Wednesday night, we're at the part of the book now, which is called More About Alcoholism. And they put this chapter in here to hammer home the idea that if you're a real alcoholic, everybody here said they were an alcoholic, then you have something wrong with your mind that will tell you it's at a certain time that it's okay to drink. Even though you've sworn forever you were never going to drink, you could have passed a lie detector test at 9 o'clock in the morning, but if you're a real alcoholic at 9:15, you're drinking and you say, how'd that happen? And the reason they're hammering this home is because they're going to want us to take some action. And unless we realize the hopelessness of our situation with ourselves, we're not going to do it. And this chapter is designed to show us the queer mental twist, they call it, that precedes the first drink. Now, everybody in this room said they're an alcoholic, so I assume you all have the allergy to alcohol. You're allergic to something that you drank a lot of. Figure that one out. But you're allergic because once it enters into your body, you want a second one. Did anybody have that problem? And you never knew where the first drink was going to take you, right? And in fact, alcoholics don't go to the liquor store and buy one of those little bottles, right? No, we have to have enough. And we check to make sure. And that allergy is something we cannot treat. You can't treat it. You can't. They talk about you could try all these schemes, but you're never going to be able to control how much you drink. So the solution is very simple. You're not to drink, right? Don't take the first drink. The problem is that our alcoholism occurs when we're sober. What happens to us after we drink is the result of the drug and the alcohol. But sober, we can't live sober without getting restless, irritable, and discontented. And then our mind says, get a drink. And once our mind says to get a drink, we can't stop it. We have no power to stop that obsession of the mind. So the treatment of our alcoholism is to learn how to live sober so that we use a different treatment when we don't feel good. We use God and the steps rather than alcohol. Alcohol was not our problem. It was the solution to our spiritual problem. If it's still working, keep drinking. But if it's not working, then AA has a program that they suggest you do and see what happens. And so they want to hammer home this problem. And we were on page 37. We finished the story about Jim. They give us three examples, Jim, the jaywalker, and Fred. Each one's a little different. Jim was someone who knew he was an alcoholic. He'd been to the treatment a million times. He failed to enlarge his spiritual life. He went to sell a car in the country for a firm that he used to own but lost. He argued with the boss. He feels he's going to stop at a bar because he knows that he can find a customer there. Jim's not making a lot of sense, is he? And then he sits in the bar and he says, I have a sandwich. And he says, that was good. And he had some milk. And then it says on page 36, suddenly the thought crossed my mind that if I could put an ounce of whiskey in my milk, it wouldn't hurt me. And then he ordered it, and he vaguely sensed he was not being too smart. And it says, thus started another journey to the asylum for Jim. And they talk about the threat of commitment. We went through this last week. The suffering. And he wrote, he had much knowledge about himself as an alcoholic, yet all reasons for not drinking were easily pushed aside in favor of the foolish idea that he could take whiskey if only he mixed it with milk. Powerful story. Now, it says, whatever the precise definition of the word may be, we call this plain insanity. It was insane for Jim to take a drink. Everybody knew that but him. Now, he knew it before he decided to get the drink. And it says on page 24, at certain times, we cannot recall the humiliation, defeat of even a moment ago. We are without defense against the first drink. Our defense must come from a higher power. So it says, how can such a lack of proportion of the ability to think straight be called anything else? So the definition of an insanity is a lack of proportion, being able to see the truth, the ability to think straight. And we're insane with regards to alcohol because we can't see the truth of it right before we drink. So did anybody try willpower? Anybody take a solemn oath? Now, willpower should work, right? But willpower won't work for alcoholism because it's my willpower. And what happens is, if I decide that I want to have a drink, I can only think about what it's going to do for me, not to me. And once I get that in here, nothing can come between me and the drink or drug. And try to get between an alcoholic and the drug or the drink. It's not a fun. And there's no power that I have no power. So it's describing a pretty grim situation. This is a hopeless disease of mind and body. But they say seemingly in the thing, and it's seemingly because they found the solution. Now, we're only on page 37, and we have to get through page 88 to finish the 11 steps and have a spiritual awakening and a power to deal with our alcoholism. But right now, they're getting us ready for the next chapter, which is We Agnostic, which is to change our ideas about God and our relationship with God. And then we read how it works, which is the steps. And then we start step 3, where we make a decision to seek God and have him be our director. And then 4 through 9 is where we face and remove the things that are blocking us from God's power. So everybody got the picture? So it says, you may think this is an extreme case. To us, it's not far-fetched for this kind of thinking. Remember, our thinking is very dangerous, has been characteristic of every single one of us. Now, the problem with us is when we think, we believe a lie, and we make decisions based on lies. We did that our whole life. We have sometimes reflected more than Jim did upon the consequences, but there was always the curious mental phenomenon, that's what they call it, because they couldn't explain it, that parallel with our sound reasoning. So here they're doing an example. We're sitting here, I have sound reasoning. Alcohol, I'm not going to drink, it's a bad idea. And then parallel to this, I have this curious mental phenomenon going on that wants to take a drink. And then it says, there inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out. So you can have sound reasoning. But once you get this curious mental phenomenon that tells you that a drink sounds good, it always wins out. Did that happen to anybody in this room? Yeah. Happened more than once? So the next day we would ask ourselves in all earnestness and sincerity, how could it happen? In some circumstances, we've gone out deliberately to get drunk. Anybody do that? Feeling ourselves justified. Any justified people in here? By nervousness, anger, worry, depression, jealousy, or the like. It was always them, right? If you lived with her, you would drink too. If you lived with him, you would drink too, right? Well, you know how it is. It was never our fault. Now, we were nervous, we were angry, we were worried, we were depressed, jealous, and the like. Those are the symptoms of the spiritual illness, you see? And we were that way because we were running the show and playing God. But even in this type of beginning, we are obliged to admit that our justification for a spree was insanely insufficient of the light of what always happens. You end up in jail. And then, you know how you tell the alcoholic from the non-alcoholic in jail? The non-alcoholic says, gee, I shouldn't have had that last drink, and I should have called Uber. The alcoholic says, I shouldn't have taken the highway.
Sorry, Steve. Turnpike.
Yeah. Well, he was going the wrong way, but there was no problem, right, Stu?
Damn cop.
It says, we now see that when we began to drink deliberately instead of casually, there was little serious or effective thought during the period of premeditation of what the terrible consequences might be. And here they're talking about towards the end. You just keep that continuous drinking until you hit the point where you can't drink anymore. And then something happened to everybody in this room because they're here tonight. So something happened so that God could enter into your heart and with his grace, and you could see the truth that you needed help. So everybody in this room has been given the grace of God, and now what are we going to do about it? So it says, and here they're going to talk about the jaywalker. And I tried to find out where they got the jaywalker story from, but I couldn't. There's a book you can get on Amazon which tells you how they put these different stories together, but I hadn't ordered it yet. Our behavior is as absurd and incomprehensible with respect to the first drink as that of an individual with a passion for jaywalking. He gets a thrill out of skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles. That's his deal. He enjoys himself for a few years in spite of friendly warnings. People are saying, did he stop running across the highway? Up to this point, and I wrote here for passion, and we had a passion for alcohol, right? Mm-hmm. And a passion is a strong and barely controllable emotion. Up to this point, you would label him as foolish chap having queer ideas of fun, which is strange ideas. Luck then deserts him, and he's slightly injured several times in succession. You would expect him, if he were normal, to cut it out. All right, he's running, he keeps getting hit. And all right, we'll clean up the coffee. And he keeps getting hit, and you would expect him to stop, right? Now, I treated a lot of alcoholics before I realized I was an alcoholic when I was younger, residency. And I would wheel him up. We had to wheel him up in those days. And I'd say, you were just here 3 weeks ago, and you swore you'd never drink. Oh, Doc, I'm done. And I'd say, well, you should be done. And then I'd see him a month later. It's cunning, baffling, and powerful. Presently, he's hit again, and this time has a fractured skull. So things are getting bad. It's our drinking gets progressive, right? We start having some bad things, and then we get really bad things. So you'd think we would stop, but a fractured skull didn't stop him. Within a week after leaving the hospital, he's running again, and he breaks his arm. He tells you he has decided to stop jaywalking for good. Do you believe him? I believe him. He's decided. He's made a decision. But why can't he follow through on the decision? That's the key. He has no power. Think about it. You have no power to follow through on your decision. That should scare you if you're new. That should make you want to work these steps and get the power in your life as soon as possible. But in a few weeks, he breaks both legs. And this goes on for years, accompanied by his continual promises to be careful. He's going to be careful now, or to keep off the streets altogether. Finally, he can no longer work. See, things are getting bad. His wife gets a divorce, and he's held up to ridicule. Did anything happen like that to you? Happened to a lot of people in this room, right? Things start catching up with us. So here now, he's going to try every known means to get the jaywalking idea out of his head. He goes to group. He goes to relapse prevention, trigger prevention. I love the trigger prevention. What is the trigger for an alcoholic? Being awake. I mean, if you're awake and you're an alcoholic, you're going to have triggers because you're seeing the whole world through your self-centered eyes, and you're not going to like the way it goes. so that he shuts himself up in an asylum, hoping to mend his ways. He's trying. He really wants to, but he has no power. So he can't see it. But the day he comes out, he races in front of a fire engine, which breaks his back. Such a man would be crazy, wouldn't he? Now, normal people, if they read the story, they're not laughing like we are. You know, we're laughing because it's ourselves, and we can see it, and we're laughing out of compassion and out of love for what happens to us. You may think this illustration is too ridiculous, but is it? We who have been through the ringer have to admit, if we substituted alcoholism for jaywalking, the illustration would fit us exactly. Think about it. It just kept getting worse. We kept trying. We tried different things. We made solemn promises. We made decisions, but the needed power wasn't there. It says, however intelligent he may have been in other respects, where alcohol has been involved, we have been strangely insane. It's strong language, isn't it true? So in my mind, this inert substance in a bottle had power over me. Think about it. How did it have power? Because I knew it would change the way I felt. It would change my perception of reality. And I learned that when I was young. And when you learn that, your mind gets damaged and it begins to understand that whenever you don't feel good, get a drink. Anybody have that in this room? And so what we need to do now is change the way we see the world without alcohol. Now, if alcohol has power over me, that means I have no power over it, right? And that means I have no power in my life, which we call God, to keep me from drinking. So this book is a treasure map about a relationship with a higher power. We call it God here, because God is one who has all power. And that relationship with God helps me react normally to alcohol. Now, does anybody want to have that happen? Anybody interested in that? Then all you have to do is go from page 38 to page 85. And if you do everything in this book, you hold it up, it's not much, is it? It says on page 85 and 84, we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, because we've done the first 9 steps. And we're living in step 10. And it says, sanity has returned. We're seldom interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. See, what we kept doing was putting our hand in the flame. Anybody ever burned themselves?
Yeah.
If you've ever burned yourself, you didn't say 5 minutes later, I'm going to do that again. No. We react sanely and normally, top of page 85. It has happened automatically. It happens. You work the steps and you're going to have something happen in your life that's going to give you a power. We have a new attitude towards liquor. It has been given us with any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. It's a miracle. We're not fighting it. We're not avoiding temptation. We've been placed in a position, neutrality, safe and protected. These are the 10-step promises. This is what it means to be recovered. If you do everything in the book up to page 85, this will happen to you. It's guaranteed. We've not sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It's just been removed. You haven't done anything. It's been removed. It doesn't exist for us. We're neither cocky nor we afraid. That is our experience. And here's the deal. This is how I'm going to react. I will react that way so long as I'm in fit spiritual condition. So what they're telling you when we got past the jaywalker is that you're not in fit spiritual condition. You have no power to react differently than you have to alcohol. And they'll tell you on page 85, you've worked the steps, you've had a relationship with your Creator, and now you're in a fit spiritual condition, so you react differently. This program is about how we react. We react differently because we be a different way. So let's go back to the jaywalker on page 38. Some of you are thinking, yes, what you tell us is true, but it doesn't fully apply. There are people who always want to be the exception. Mm-hmm. We're not that bad. Mm-hmm. New people, a lot of new people, I know I did it. You come in here, you're comparing yourself to everybody else. Mm-hmm. Well, I have a house at least. They don't have a house. Mm-hmm. I don't have a wife, but I have a car. You know, I have a job. They don't have a job. You know, we do that. oh, they had a DUI. I don't have a DUI yet. You know, hitting bottom, and I'll just say this, hitting bottom is not circumstances out there. Hitting bottom is circumstances in here. Mm-hmm. When you see that you're completely defeated, there's no hope for you to fix this. And you can keep having worse circumstances. You can have circumstances until death. But it's a gift when you have that moment when you can see the truth about your situation and how I can't fix this. And I remember the moment, 2:30 in the afternoon, when I got down on my knees and I asked God to help me. I was done. As soon as I did that, I felt a little better. And then God put all these people in my life, and I'm here today doing this meeting. Who would have thought that? And it says, we admit we have some, but we have not gone to the extremes you fellows did, nor are we likely to. And here's a great line. This you can put this on your tombstone. We understand ourselves so well after what you have told us that such things cannot happen again. And that's what people come here for. They want to understand it so that this won't happen, or they'll be able to control it, or they'll go a while. Understanding myself will never fix this because it's understanding myself, not God's self. And I need knowledge of God rather than knowledge of me. I have enough knowledge of me. In fact, you're going to learn when you do steps 4 through 9 that you're going to get rid of everything you were wrong about. And it says, we have not lost everything in life through drinking, and we certainly do not intend to. Thanks for the information. Well, they probably mean it. This is why people die. They can't take the first step thoroughly. The first step has to be 100%. The first step says you admit you're powerless over alcohol, but the first step in recovery is what? We had to fully concede to our innermost selves what? That we're alcoholic. You have to be an alcoholic before you can admit you're powerless over it. And then the book tells you what makes it up. I talked about it, the allergy of the body, the obsession of the mind. And then there's a hyphen. The hyphen is where a lot of people die. Most alcoholics die in the hyphen in the first step. Our lives were unmanageable. Now, they left two words out. I called New York. They're going to add it next time. They're going to put, stop it. By me. I made my life unmanageable. See, a lot of people read that and said, yeah, our lives were unmanageable. You know, you live with her. You know, you go to that job. But no, by me. I made my life unmanageable. And that is what leads to complete defeat. I could not manage my life anymore. Now, what can't we manage when we come in here? There's one thing we all cannot manage. Not taking the first drink. And that's pretty bad, isn't it? So once we learn how to manage that by getting in fit spirit condition, we're going to learn how to manage the rest of our lives so we're not in conflict with everybody and everyone. We're not angry and afraid. We're going to be of love and service to everyone, and we're going to be in fit spiritual condition. So now we'll finish up with this last paragraph. That may be true of certain non-alcoholic people who, though drinking foolishly and heavy at the present time, are able to stop or moderate because their brains and bodies have not been damaged as much as ours were. Now, some people may read that and think that's them. Most people in this room is not them. Most people who are drinking foolishly and heavily don't end up in AA. It's just a hint. And when our brains get damaged to the truth regarding alcohol, there's no hope for us, right? And Father Bill W., he's a great speaker. You can listen to him next day. He says that there's part of our mind that's been damaged because we've learned to seek the effect of alcohol, and that when we have this perception and we don't like it, the mind, it's triggered. And once it's triggered, we can't stop it. The only thing that can stop that is God. And that's why this program has been so powerful and it's changed the world. But here's the line, but the actual potential alcoholic, with hardly an exception, and this is in squiggly writing. Squiggly writing's important in the big book. Will be absolutely unable to stop. Now, absolutely unable to stop means that you're going to drink again. See, they don't tell you you're going to drink again. They tell you you're unable to stop. Now, a lot of people will read that. I've worked with some, And they'll say, at certain times, we cannot recall the humiliation, defeat. We had no. And they say, well, I know when that certain time's going to come, and then I'll be able to handle it. No, you don't know when the certain time's coming. That's the problem. It could happen to me tonight. I hope not. But I've done a lot today to seek God, and so I don't think it's going to happen. And so they're trying to get you to understand the seriousness of your condition. Absolutely unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. More knowledge about me won't help me. That's why therapy won't work. Nothing will work except knowledge of God, a relationship with God, and finding out how my thinking was wrong, my self-centered thinking was wrong, and to be able to recognize it with God's help and not act that way. And I have the card, I gave out some tonight, the left and right-hand side. The right-hand side of our card is the personality that I have when I'm separated from God. And if I have that personality being selfish, dishonest, frightened, inconsiderate, prideful, greedy, here's the whole list. How do I feel? Restless, irritable, guilt, and shame. And then we drink over that. And what we want to do with the steps and with God's help is be the personality God created. See, I created this person by living in my own self-centered world. God created this person, and there's nothing to keep me from being this person except me. And the fourth step is where you learn how to stop being this and with God's help be this way. It's the whole deal. It's not a complicated program. The point we wish to emphasize and reemphasize is smash home. They want to smash home upon our alcohol readers that has been revealed to us out of bitter experience. So self-knowledge is not going to work. Knowledge of God is the answer. Now I'm going to stop here. I'm not going to do Fred. I'll do Fred next week and finish the chapter because this is powerful stuff. We had a lot of new people here. I hope this was helpful. And we'll open it up and share, and thank you. Thank you.